My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to fall over. I'm very grateful to be here tonight. Just standing vertically at this time of the day is a major achievement for me. About 4.5 years after I got sober, I still remember how nice it was being on the floor. And because in my mind, you know, you're already on the floor, so there's no, you know, you can't fall over and get hurt. You're already there. And, you know, it wasn't a bad deal. If I could get someone to bring me booze, you know, I really couldn't knock it over because it was right there on the floor with me. So I had it all worked out in my mind. I could talk about it for 3 hours, how it made good sense to drink on the floor, but that's not really what I'm here for. You know, I'm really here to share or transmit the same message that I was given by Alcoholics Anonymous, which is that there's another way to live and there's a way out. And for all the newcomers here or who are here, I welcome you, and I welcome you to AA. And if you're anything like me, you know, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I was more than willing to admit I was powerless over alcohol. My wife was my wife. I wasn't even married, but I'm making one up. My wife was completely unmanageable. And I really tried to get a wife in AA, but I escaped about 18 months ago. So that one keeps eluding me. But anyway, I got here on November 1st of 2003. And as you may figure out, you know, we're all smart in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the day after Halloween. And I was my Halloween outfit was Fox Mulder, and there's a new movie version of the X-Files. But that was like my deal, is I thought Fox Mulder was like the man. And the reason was the motto of that show is the truth is out there. And I really thought I was seeking the truth. I didn't know where it was or what it was, but I'm on the way to get it. When I get there, I'm going to tell you about it. Hell, I'm going to tell you about it now because I think I already know what it is. I'm just going to tell you about it. And people really weren't interested in listening to me much when I was drinking or not drinking, but you know, ironically, I came to find that the truth is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the truth for me is very simple. And it's, you know, I've heard it many, you know, many ways, and it's in the, you know, literature. But really simply put is that God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. But, there, you know, I have to do work to get there. You know, there's a lot of footwork I have to do. I have to work the steps, and I have to be about, you know, be of service and get up and move my ass. And, you know, hopefully that's the only swear word I say tonight. I'm trying to be as nice as possible. I'm podcasting to the universe. And so my story basically began on that day. I mean, I wasn't born on that day. I moved around a lot when I was young, and I'll get through this quick. But, you know, the message I got from moving around when I was a kid, my dad was in the Air Force, is that connections really aren't important, you know, because we're going to up and move anyway. So good, bad, or indifferent, whatever I got, it's going to be gone from one day to the next. And I just came to accept that that was reality. And I still have a lot of that in my mind, and it you know, can cause me some difficulty. But it doesn't cause me the difficulty it did, which was, you know, alcoholic oblivion, which is where I was before I came here. So we moved around a lot, and we ended up in California when I was 13. And, you know, I didn't start drinking until I was about 17, but I was just, it was a weird place to live. You know, there's really a little connection between the family members, and my dad didn't drink, my mom didn't drink. My mom was big-time pre-Al-Anon. My dad's pre-something, I don't know what, but he didn't drink. He had a lot of anger. And if it didn't move, he'd catch it and break it. But if it moved, he didn't really try to hit it. And that was, you know, like he broke the dishwasher. I don't know how you break a dishwasher, you know, because it's kind of like encased. But he found a way. So just to explain a little bit what it was like there, and I'll get through this quick, is Saturday morning was like fight night. But my parents were morning people, so they fought in the morning. You know, I got to get to sleep early so we can fight in the morning. And so I get up on a Saturday morning, usually hungover Saturday mornings, and there's probably no coincidence there. And I still have fond memories of hangovers. I loved, not like the first when you wake up hangover, but like 4 or 5 hours later when you're kind of coming off it, but you still have that little tiny bit of like the whatever it is in your system, so you're not quite feeling the world yet. I used to love that feeling when it was kind of like, you know, basically at that point in my mind, I was convincing myself I'm never going to have to drink again because I feel so fantastic because I just got it on last night. But 6 hours later, we're back to square one. But anyway, in the house, I got up on a Saturday morning. I went outside in the backyard, and we had one of these above-ground hot tubs, and he was chopping up into little pieces with a pickaxe. And we're not in the mob. We don't, like, put things in bags. And I said, well, what are we doing? And he said, well, the garbage men don't pick up hot tubs. It's too big. So I got to cut it up into little pieces, and that way the garbage men will pick it up. All right. And that was just the way the house was. It was just odd things happening and very little sense. You know, people talked, and it just very little connection and just odd. And that's the best way I can explain it. And so by the time I started drinking, I was not the first one to drink in my group of buddies. And I don't know if maybe some people have the same story. I was very critical of them. I thought, well, if you guys have to drink, because most of their parents were alcoholics and mine weren't. So I looked at them and said, look at your parents, man. Look what they're doing to their wives. Why are you guys drinking? So once I started drinking, I was like, I'm buying. You know, please forgive me for everything I said about you and your family. You know, I was the first one that had a car. So, you know, jump in, let's go get it. We'd go to a place in Santa Ana called Hank's. And, you know, the first economics lesson I had in life is that $12 got you six beers. And this is, you know, 15, 18 years ago. And that was, you know, supply and demand right there. Because there's very few places I knew of in my neighborhood where you could buy it. So I bought, you know, O'Doul's and, not O'Doul's, Mickey's. I got Irish in my mind. It's like, we got Mickey's and, there's something starting with an O. I can't remember what it is that I used to love. But anything cheap, you know, Thunderbird, Mad Dog 2020, because that was like, that was in my price range when I was in high school. So, and I wanted to get there quick. I really didn't understand, like, not getting there quick. So, you know, I did that. You know, I was magically transformed by alcohol, and my world was radically changed the second I put the alcohol to my lips. Actually, the second I got in the car to go buy the alcohol is when the transformation began. Once I got that obsession in my mind that I'm going to get what I need, I feel better immediately. So I can relate to when people talk about having gone out and coming back in, that they were out long before they were really out. You know, I could see how that could happen, and I'm really scared that that would happen to me. So I'm really regular and I don't want to say rigid. Rigid is really not the right word, but just very consistent in my practicing of the program. So anyway, I went to college. I moved to Spain. You know, I'm the kind of guy that if it ain't special, I don't feel normal. And that's the short way to put it. So I lived abroad, and it was fantastic. A lot of good things have come of it. But, you know, I drank a lot when I was over there. You know, I moved back after a couple of years. Again, moving is no big thing for me. Moving's normal. You know, it's just what happens after a couple of years. I got to go. Good or bad, it's not like it's always a geographic. It's just, I got to go. And so I came back. I was living with my folks. And then the desperation and the pain set in. And I never really felt that before. I just thought, this is how people live. I mean, this is just how you survive in the world, is you drink. And I think if it wasn't for alcohol, I probably would have committed suicide. So I think it really kind of kept me in a state of suspended animation until the pain was great enough that I was able to seek out really outside help. So I got to that point, and I was living with them, and I was I didn't drink in the house as a sober household, but I spent a lot of time away from the home drinking, and I love drinking at a house, perfectly not my house, but your house is the best place to drink. And, you know, did drive around drunk quite a bit and did the blood check on the car and all that stuff. Never got arrested, thankfully. But I felt another way to feel less than when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous is if you haven't been arrested. I looked at people and thought, well, I've never robbed a liquor store. I don't belong here. That's just another way my mind tries to tell me to get drunk. Is that you don't belong, no matter what it is. You don't belong. So I went to my first AA meeting, and really what it was is Fernando, who's going to speak tonight, I went with him to Lake Isabella, who was speaking at a conference out there, and I went with him just because I didn't want to die. When they left to go away that weekend, I thought to myself, they're going to be gone for 3 days. When they come back, I'm not going to be here. And I didn't really know what that meant. There was just some voice in my mind telling me that you're not going to make it for the next 3 days. Maybe I just would have ran away, and maybe I would have killed myself. I don't really know, but I believed it. It was kind of like, all right, there's some kind of truth in that voice that I've never heard before. So I'm used to hearing stuff in my head, so that was nothing new to have stuff telling me what's going on. So I went away, and I identified as an alcoholic at that meeting. But it was like no big deal because, I mean, I'll say anything. I'm an alcoholic. Great. You know, I'm a thoracic surgeon. Like, it's easy just to say stuff. But to actually mean it is a whole other level. So one reason I said it is that I didn't want to be hassled after the meeting, because I've been to a few meetings when I was 18 just to you know, look at the animals in the zoo, but I didn't want to get in the cage. So I realized that if you don't identify as an alcoholic at the break and after the meeting, there's going to be 20 people asking, why are you here? Not an alcoholic? What's wrong? You know, just, I don't want to be the guy that gets hassled. So guess what? I'm an alcoholic. And in the inside of my mind, thinking, yeah, whatever. And as you see, I kind of go quick. So my mind was just like zooming the whole time. And I didn't really stop drinking then. But a couple days later was Halloween. And after that, I went to a meeting in Corona Del Mar. I was a men's stag. And that was where I really identified and I believed it. And I thought my life was over, because I thought, well, these people were really talking about not drinking. And I never really considered that as a possibility in life, was this not drinking thing. Because what do you do if you're not drinking? How do you live? How do you survive? How do you deal with the pain? How do you leave the house? I mean, and I didn't drink every day. I don't want to make it sound as though I drank 24/7. It's just that when I had to drink, I had to drink. And that was just reality. Some days I'd get up in the morning and I had to drink that day, and that was it. So my life revolved around, when I need to drink, what do I got to do to drink? And I got to plan ahead for this. So I'm always thinking about it. So it's always in my mind, this obsession of taking care of myself with my alcohol consumption. And So I came and admitted as an alcoholic. And really, to me, that's a pretty scary, painful thing because it means that I'm basically screwed. The first step tells me I'm screwed. I'm powerless over alcohol, no matter what. I'm just as powerless now, 4 years after not drinking, as I was the day I came in here. Because on my own devices, without a connection to my higher power, something's going to come into my mind that tells me, you need to drink. And if that voice keeps rattling around long enough, and I got nothing to prevent that voice from getting more volume, I'm going to drink. I mean, I don't feel that I'm in any way cured. So, you know, I think deep down there is still a fear of what's going to happen, what would happen if I don't practice the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't stay connected to my higher power. I mean, I don't think it's, you know, it's not that I've learned tools to apply in my life and learned actions I can take that'll keep that obsession at bay, but I've not learned in any way how to change myself into a non-alcoholic, and that's not my objective. I don't really want to be a non-alcoholic. I don't even know what that is. But I've learned how to live in this world as an alcoholic and, for the most part, be okay with it. And life is not easy. One thing I mentioned is I was engaged about a year and a half ago, and a couple of months after getting engaged, I got unengaged. And it was a very painful and traumatic experience, but I didn't drink. More important, I didn't have to drink. I like talking, not just that I didn't drink, but I didn't have to drink. Because I think that if I'm in a position where, I think we all know what it feels like to have to drink, I'll be drinking. So I don't want to ever feel like I have to drink again. And, you know, I give credit to God, my higher power, for removing that obsession. So, you know, I will say I have worked the steps. I have a sponsor. Right now I'm sponsoring a couple of guys that are in a recovery home, and, you know, that's a blessing, getting their phone calls, hearing their, you know, insanity running around in their mind and knowing that we're no different. One of the guys just got out of prison, and one of the guys, his parents stuck him in there, and he's never been in trouble with the law. But when I hear him on the phone, it sounds like the same thinking pattern, the same obsessions, the same thing rattling around in their head that I got going in mine. So it reminds me on a daily basis that I'm in the right place and I'm doing the right thing, and as weirded out as it gets, you know, this is really as good as it gets for a guy like me. And I think I'm pretty much running out of time. But, you know, the one thing I'll say to the newcomers, and I mean, it sounds so stupid. When I came here, I thought this is just, it's so stupid is what I thought when I first came here. Keep coming back. I thought, what the hell does that mean? Like, I keep going to the bar. I keep coming back there. You know, my life isn't really getting better. And, you know, I really didn't understand, like, this idea of consistency, doing these actions over and over again, hearing Chapter 3 and Chapter 5 read over and over again. I thought, how stupid to hear the same thing over and over again. I just thought, give me the one-day class. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, screw it. I mean, that was where I was at. And, you know, I found that's not the case. I hear something new every time. You know, every time I work a step with a sponsee or my sponsor, if I'm working on a step, I learn something new. I see something new. Sometimes it's things I don't want to learn. I think I'm getting there. I see the whistles coming up to the mouth. But thank you very much for being a part of my sobriety and giving me a chance to participate. Thank you very much.